In this episode of the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast, I share conversation with Elizabeth Peterson, a third grade teacher in the state of New Hampshire. Our conversation started with Elizabeth's deeply considered definition of a term with which we're all familiar, whole child. I wanted to learn her personal perspective because I feel that how we as educators define this term has an impact on how we relate to our students. Other topics we discussed included the need for teachers who are inspired and the very real fact that inspiration is not a switch that can be flipped on and off, but it can be nurtured in ways that are truly meaningful for significant and enriching benefits in the classroom for our students and for ourselves as well. We went on to learn about ways in which Elizabeth has explored ways to grow inspiration that are real, fun, and truly rewarding on many levels, using art, even though she does not consider herself an artist in that common understanding of what that word means or implies. This was a good conversation, and I'm so glad to share it with you. Welcome again to the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast. My name is Nene White, and I am your host. Elizabeth Peterson, I am so glad to be having this conversation with you. Thank you for your time. I know you are one busy third grade teacher.
You're so welcome, Nene. I'm glad to be here talking with you.
Good, good. So I wish I could remember how I came across you and what you're doing and what you're inspired by. However it happened, I am very grateful because I think the world needs to know about teachers like you who really care and who are creating resources for other teachers besides in your own classroom that can really make the job even more meaningful and easier.
Yes, we need a little ease every once in a while, for sure.
Exactly. So I have so many questions, and I know that I told you I was going to tell you some of them. I might be surprising you with a few other ones that come up in this conversation. I hope that's okay.
Of course.
Very, very, very well prepared. So for some reason, I wanted to start with how you define whole child.
Sure. Yeah. So I think when I think of the whole child, that would be really taking into consideration, you know, a student's interests, their talents, their weaknesses, what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, and really looking at everything, really, you know, what they're capable of, what they're capable of physically, mentally, emotionally, academically. And I think more and more as we go through these years, because these have been some tough years, and I'm not even just talking about COVID pandemic stuff, I'm talking about the last 10 or so years, we've been seeing our students change in front of us, and it's becoming more and more important for us to really understand each individual and whole child to really, you know, be able to reach them academically and just on different levels as well, to help them to realize how important their learning really is.
Spoken like a truly dedicated
I'd like to think so.
I'm really getting that. Thank you. And of course, as soon as we hear that definition that you've shared with us, you know, you go, yeah, how do you do that with 25 completely individual and unique individuals? Yeah. And it doesn't happen like that, but it's got to happen through processes that unfold this understanding and this awareness of each individual. So how long have you been teaching?
I'm finishing up my 24th year this year.
Oh, good. Yes. Yeah. And when did you start to feel like, okay, I've got this? Not that you'll ever totally get it, but that you've got a handle. How long did that take you?
I mean, honestly, I don't know if you ever do. Like, I feel like I have a handle on the content that I teach. I've been teaching third grade now for several years. I've been kind of, I did fourth grade for several years, went to third grade now. I spent 7 years teaching middle school music. And so you get to a point where you have a handle on your curriculum and your content, but then every year you get a new group of students that just kind of, you know, flips your whole your whole thing. You can start out with some things that you know are tried and true, but then you need to adapt and help help this new group that's in front of you. And so I mean you get to a point where you feel confident that you can do it, and you know your resources, and a set of strategies that can work for the most part, and then also know when to reach out and ask for help too. So I think it's really, you get to a point where you're mature enough to understand that you can't know it all, and you have to reach out when you need to.
Right. And I think that is the point when I was a teacher where I thought, okay, I know how to deal with the problems that are going to come up, and problems will come up.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I have the answers, but I know what to do inside myself, how to connect with the students basically that are connectable. And this is relating back to that whole child definition that you started out with. Because if we can see that, or at least be trying to see it,
mm-hmm.
and trying to develop it, which I feel is something that you are quite dedicated to.
Yeah, I try to be. I mean, you're gonna have tough days always, but you gotta, gotta be able to kind of dig deep and remember why you're doing this without being cliche. You gotta know your why, right? You gotta know that you went into this profession for the right reasons. And, sometimes you gotta pull from that, and sometimes you need to take a break too. So you gotta really understand what it is your needs are as a teacher. And I think more and more teachers are realizing that and searching for that as well, which is so important.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, let's keep it real.
Oh yeah, I'll keep it real for you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay, so you do have something really, really beautiful to share with other teachers, and we are going to talk about that.
Yeah.
But what I've seen in what you care about is that the teachers need to be inspired,
mm-hmm.
students to be inspired. And every time anybody thinks about a teacher that they really loved, that teacher made it so much fun because obviously they were having fun, or they were turned on, or they were digging deep in places I'd never seen anybody dig deep, whatever. So what would you like to tell us about teachers getting inspired if they don't feel inspired? That's a tall order. You can't flip a switch. What are your thoughts on that subject?
Yeah, you can't flip a switch for sure. Unless you get that little spark that does, but obviously, but in my website, the Inspired Classroom, our motto is to get inspired in order to be inspiring. And, when I was kind of figuring that out, cause wording is important, and it's not, be inspired, it's get inspired. And I truly believe that teachers need to take the reins and invest in themselves and go searching out what is going to inspire them. And with my focus on the arts and trying wholeheartedly to bring the arts into my classroom and help other teachers do the same, when you can really help teachers to see how beneficial creativity can be for themselves and for their students. And I love watching teachers do professional development with the arts. You know, it's hands-on for themselves. I call it teacher-centered professional development. And teachers really need to go out there and find that for themselves, because if you take a passive seat and wait for your school or your district to provide all the professional development for you, unfortunately, a lot of it can leave you uninspired. Or it's, you know, the run of the mill stuff, or, you know, it's not really catering. This may be a little controversial, but it's not catering to the teacher first.
Right.
It's very so student-centered that I feel like a lot of people are missing the mark. And if you can find professional development that's teacher-centered, that's how you can get your teachers excited, because they're doing things that are meaningful to them, and then they're going to want to bring those experiences to their students. And so that's that, you know, getting inspired that I think a lot of teachers need to go out and seek for themselves sometimes.
And inspired doesn't necessarily mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but inspired can just be turned on.
Absolutely.
Don't be great at something, but you're great at wanting to know more about it. Or how would you define inspired for us, or give us a picture of it?
Yeah, I mean, it gets you excited. It gets you motivated. You know, it gets you wanting to learn or do more. And we all need that. And our students need that. And so if we can find ourselves getting inspired, that's when we can be inspiring to our students and help them to find that inspiration for their own learning as well.
Right. And it can be a quiet, just a kindling of something. It doesn't have to be.
That's yeah. True.
I mean, inspired can look all kinds of different ways, but there's a feeling of a natural draw in a certain direction. And I saw in some of your things that you had to do something that was administration mandated about a social emotional learning program.
Yep.
And you felt the opposite of inspired when you were delivering that, as did
right.
your other teachers in your tell us about that, because nobody is unfamiliar with that experience, I think.
Yeah, there are many teachers that are very familiar with that. And I'll get real. I feel that a lot of the scripted programming, it has good information. And I feel that it's good information in terms of for the teacher maybe, but the delivery, it's about the delivery really, is often dry, I dare say uninspiring. It's passive. It doesn't really give students real experiences in it. You know, I sometimes like to draw the comparison to, like, if you have a six-year-old who wants to learn how to ride a bike, you don't put them in front of a YouTube video to see what other kids are doing to learn how to ride a bike. You give the kid a bike, you put them on, you try, you help them to balance, you guide them, you have them hold on to the handlebars, you know, you have them run off and try it out and make mistakes and fall a couple of times. And that's how a kid learns how to ride a bike, not by watching a video or talking about it a lot. And unfortunately, that is a lot of the delivery when it comes to things like empathy or kindness. Yeah, there might be some little activities here and there, but I feel like the scripted lessons don't always allow for those really meaningful experiences that students can have and learn innately what it means to be empathetic and experience what it is to be kind and then be at the receiving end of kindness as well.
So yeah, we're talking about hands-on learning.
Absolutely.
What teacher doesn't know that that's the way that we all learn?
Right. Exactly. Learn by doing.
Huh?
Learn by doing.
Learn by doing. Yeah. And there's brain science out there and just, you know, hello.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And I'm very biased, but I think that the arts can be such an amazing way to give kids that hands-on learning.
Well, I love your bias, but I also love your boundary breaking bias, because you're all about any of the arts, music. Mm-hmm. Tell us the arts that you're talking about here.
Yeah. So, you know, generally we're talking about the four main arts forms of, you know, music, visual art, dance, and drama. But with all my work with arts integration, you know, I like to also include media arts and storytelling and poetry. And, you know, if there's a teacher who enjoys cooking or baking, that's an art form. You know, there's so many different art forms that teachers can really tap into, because one of the main objections, if you will, that I hear from some teachers is, well, you know, well, I can't do arts integration because, you know, I'm not an artist or I'm not a musician. And that's okay. It really is. It's okay. You can find your thing to just get started, and then, like we said before, you can go out and get inspired with some great professional development, or go out and take a painting class or something that's going to maybe spur a little bit more knowledge for you. But, you know, you can start wherever you are, even if it's, you know, a short poem or reading a story, you know, doing some kind of storytelling. The arts really can be boundless, like you said.
Yeah. And also, what's coming to my mind right now is just that whole idea of the growth mindset, that we don't have to, it's okay. Mistakes are great. Mistakes mm-hmm. are great.
Mm-hmm.
They're valuable. And that learning process and just watching how, you know, these skills expand and grow.
Yeah.
All of that. And teachers, like you've had teachers learn from you.
Mm-hmm.
And they will give you that concern that they're not good enough at this particular art or that. What do you say to them? And what do you say to them? And then how do they respond when you say it? And what's their next step? So that's three questions.
Okay, three questions. I'm going to see if I can remember the three.
I'm right here to remind
you. Well, one thing I will tell them is, you know, for me, I'm no visual artist. I can draw a stick figure, you know, but I can't let my limitations limit my students. So if I have students in my class, which I generally do every year, you know, we all have a student who's a great visual artist. Well, who am I to tell that kid no? No, I don't know if you should really do an art project with this content that we're learning, you know, because I can't see myself doing it. You know, same thing, you know, could be the same thing with drama, you know, for me. You know, I'm not a trained actor or actress, but, you know, I'm not going to let that limit my students if that's something that they want to tap into and they want to try. I think you really have to ultimately get to a mindset where you're open-minded, you've got a growth mindset of your own, and you have to understand that, you know, some kids are, you gotta let them fly, right? For some kids, you've got to open up that door for them, and that could be the one art form or the one approach that really reaches that kid. And you don't want to lose out on that opportunity for them or for yourself, for that matter. Yeah.
Right. So you say that to teachers, and then what do they say when you say that to them? And then what's the next step that they take?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for many teachers, they start to understand that, right? And we can have the conversation about, you know, be real with your students. You know, I tell my students straight up, I'm not a good drawer. I wish I was. I probably should take some classes. Or I can take the approach of, you know, how do you draw a dog? Like, how do you draw a dog? Because I could learn something from you. And that's not to say that I'm showing that I'm a doofus at anything, but I'm showing my own curiosity. And of course, as years go by, you know, I learn a couple of things here and there. And there's also something to be said about, you know, just your common sense as you grow older, you know, being able to say, oh, you know, maybe you could shade this. Maybe I don't know exactly how, but haven't you been learning about that in your art class? You know, so just having a good conversation with students to be able to kind of draw some of their talent and skills out and to have them try it as well. And so, you know, just having those kind of conversations with teachers and I don't know if normalizing is the right word, but just kind of making it so that it becomes okay to have those conversations with your students, if that makes sense.
Love it. Because yeah. Those are the times when you can connect with them. That's what I always found, that there's,
yeah.
That, you know, you're just being real, and we all want real.
Yeah. Yes.
Why would we want anything else? So, okay, now I want to ask you, because I want to see how the teachers take this forward, this mindset forward, but mm-hmm. in relationship to them putting together the arts, mm-hmm. different forms, any of the forms that you mentioned before, and then they are expressing themselves around something that will draw, that will highlight kindness or empathy or any set of emotions or help them to collaborate, but all the different social emotional skills. So is that question clear?
Yes. Okay. Well, I think so. So that is where, you know, when over the years, as students' social and emotional needs were becoming more and more evident, I found myself, well, I remember it was the beginning of the school year, I think it was like in 2017, where the assistant superintendent was standing on the stage at the first day of school, right? And talking about this thing called SEL. And, you know, I was sitting there in my jeans and I was kind of huddled over and kind of like half paying attention in the first day of school, you know, true confessions here. But then, you know, she was saying, you know, we're really going to think about this social emotional learning. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, what's this next thing that they're going to make us do, right? But as she was talking, I thought, okay, our kids really need this. So I'm going to perk up. I'm going to listen a little bit. And she would start talking about, you know, self-awareness and how students really need to understand, you know, their own emotions and be able to express themselves appropriately, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking to myself, well, yeah, but we could do that with visual art. Absolutely. Okay, I'm listening now. And then she said, oh, social awareness and how, you know, students need to be aware of others and their differences and understand the diversity and should be able to show empathy for others. And I thought, well, yeah, I've done that before in my class with drumming circles and, you know, listening to music. And so for every social emotional, you know, competency that she was starting to talk about, I was thinking, oh my gosh, we can do that with drama. You know, we can do that with, music and dance and movement. And so I left that meeting going with my little notes thinking, I'm gonna nail this social emotional stuff. And so I set out that year and I started to really kind of devise. I felt like I had the permission almost to start playing around with different art projects and different experiences and things like that. And so, but the best part was that my students were responding so well. I remember this one time we were doing a self-expression watercolor, and you know, the kids were working on their own watercolors, and we had talked about it, and they were just kind of doing it to the music, and I was going around, and it was my opportunity to go and sit next to each child and talk to them about what they were painting. And I came to this one boy, and you know, I was pointing out different things because I was going to make it into a writing assignment after. I was like, oh, well, what is this? Why did you use this color? Who's this person that you seem to be painting? And he just put down his paintbrush and he started to cry. And it was just like this moment where he could finally open up about all this stuff that he was keeping inside about, you know, his dad and how he doesn't see his dad. And, you know, he keeps these emotions bottled up. And this was like one of the perkiest, happiest little boys ever, but he was keeping all of this inside. And it was like this little open door for us to have this wonderful conversation. And then, you know, from there, you know, we talked about it, and we talked about how he could use his painting and kind of keep it with him and put it in a special place so that he could remember these feelings and, you know, come back to them. But it also opened the door for me, because let's face it, sometimes I feel like we teachers are like at the front line of so many things that are going on in our students' lives. And so I was able to then, you know, talk to the guidance counselor and tell them what I had learned, and, you know, started to kind of start that path for this little boy to get some help that he obviously needed. And so it was just so rewarding in that way to be able to do that. And that was all through the art. And so I discovered, you know, yet again, I knew the power of the arts for learning, but I was starting to really understand on a new level the power of the arts for social emotional skill building as well. And of course, that's what led to SEAL becoming a thing.
And SEAL stands for?
Social Emotional Artistic Learning.
Social Emotional Artistic Learning.
Yeah.
All right. So was that lesson where the kids were watercoloring, was that integrated into some other discipline? Or because I know your whole, a big part of what you bring to other teachers is to not put more work on them, just to help their work be more efficient. So
yeah. Yeah, so I was definitely utilizing some time to, you know, kind of experiment with, you know, how could I integrate the arts with social emotional skills. And then I was also utilizing the watercolor itself for some writing piece that we were doing at the time as well. So it was kind of, you know, like all three at once: the arts, social emotional, language arts, all together. And it was really nice because, you know, it got that listening and speaking in there, as well as I was able to check in with the students. So there's so much going on with that particular lesson.
Come back to whole child.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's so beautiful. This podcast exists to bring to other teachers, other educators, and parents too, people like you who almost live. I mean, I live to draw out inside of kids. You know, yeah. It's not to, I mean, yeah, we need to teach them, but to draw out their genius, their all the things that you were talking about when you were defining whole child. And I just think you are really just a master of this. And
oh, thank you.
Well, especially because you've created resources that help other teachers do it without adding to the workload. Magic.
Yes. this is absolutely.
Yeah. So Okay, so I get a sense of how that child, his life really had a much healthier forward momentum from that experience. Are there other ways that you can, other examples that you can tell us where other kids had other, you know, maybe pivots or turns or growth experiences where, yeah, this matters. I'm going to take this forward.
Yeah.
in your own words.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, within SEAL, we have a lot of different strategies. And like you had mentioned, you know, strategies that really don't pile more on top. So, you know, the watercolor lesson, yeah, that's a little extra, and there's a place for that inside the method of SEAL and how you can really bring things into your classroom and target the students that are actually in front of you, which is, you know, like giving the kid the bike when he needs the bike instead of, you know, oh, let's watch a movie about the bike. But there are the embedded strategies that really just energize the methods that you're bringing in. And those are the ones that just kind of melt into your routines and into your day. And one that I think is, I think it's a teacher favorite is soundtracking. And basically what that is strategically choosing music that's going to fit whatever the part of the day is that you want to soundtrack with music. And so with, I remember with one student in particular really took to this idea of soundtracking in the, during our math group time. And she was, this is another, a fourth grader. She was a student who would just get herself distracted with her own mind. And, you know, we would do, for example, a warm-up paper with, you know, like 50 equations, right? And the class would be done and she would be on number 5, right? Because you could see, and I would kind of sit there and observe her every once in a while, and you would see her just slowly stop her pencil, and her eyes went somewhere else, and her mind went somewhere else. And so what I would do is I'd go over and I'd talk to her about, you know, how can we use this music to really help you? And so I would say, okay, I know, there's a specific way to like introduce it into the classroom and really get it so that the students can understand why this music is even playing, right? So bring that back to her attention and help her to focus in on it, and she would go right back into her work. And so it was amazing, you know, through small encounters with her over weeks, maybe months, you know, I would help her to just kind of refocus herself, and eventually she could do it for herself. And I've had other students as well, you know, who will tell me that they use soundtracking like at home for their homework sessions. And we'll talk about, oh, well, what music are you choosing? Is it the right kind? You know, is it really helping you? Is it distracting you? And just really having those quality conversations that it's kind of a study strategy, right? To help students to study. But really what it is a self-management strategy, where students can really utilize the art of listening to music to really help them to focus in on what they need to get done.
Beautiful. And that's like a foundational social emotional skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I want to ask you if you've seen some growth in kids from your SEAL applications, mm-hmm. where their interactions with other kids were more positive or constructive. What kinds of things have you seen there?
So another teacher favorite of SEAL is what we call Friendly Friday. And the very basic of that is being able to try to once a week have something where the students can make and exchange a friendly note to a classmate. And there are so many different, you know, variations on this. You know, it's not always sending each other a note, but it might be, you know, just a whole bunch of different things. And so with these Friendly Friday activities, it really allows the kids to interact with one another, but also see what others are capable of, and in some cases, see what other kids are incapable of. And at the same time, you know that that other student that maybe made something for you, even if it came out in a way that you think is not that great, you know that they spent time on it, that they put their heart and soul into it, and they and you can show true gratitude to them for doing that. And it's just a nice, again, hands-on way to really help students to understand that, you know, it's not just a surface level thing that you're being given, but there is something underneath. Like this classmate of yours, who you may or may not even be friends with outside of the class, or even inside the class, really put in some time to make this for you. And, you know, it just gives them that sense of the variety of students that they have in their own classrooms, or gives them, you know, an idea of the diverse skills that are in the classroom as well, which I think is a really powerful thing. Because all too often, you know, you can see what other kids are doing, and it may or may not be up to par with what you think they should be doing. But this is just another really experiential way to kind of help address that and help students to have that true empathy for, you know, what, and social awareness of what's going on with other students around them.
And it just would seem to widen their circle of who they're aware of.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. What else should I, you know, I have questions that I, you know, questions that I should be asking you that I have. what would you like us to know? What else?
Oh, goodness. Well, I just think what really comes down to is that, you know, students are doing things, right? So with SEAL, I really wanted to make things both proactive and explicit. And so allowing teachers to bring these strategies and activities into the classroom and help their students practice them before they need them, I think is really important.
Yes.
Yep. So the proactive part, and then being explicit in explaining why we're doing this, you know, explaining to my girl who was having trouble focusing on her math, explaining to her what it is about music that's really helping you here, and why is that important, and why do you maybe need it more so than another person, and how can you use it? And so being really explicit about the skills that they're learning. Because I think here's what I think about with SEL in general. I think SEL in schools really needs to be focused in on transitioning your students into the classroom and then helping them to learn the content that you're teaching. And if teachers can really just have that focus, I think it can be so beneficial for the schools, the districts, the kids, and really understanding that, you know, it shouldn't be too convoluted. We shouldn't get on too many tangents with social emotional learning. It really is about helping students to sometimes quite literally get into the classroom and transition to learning, and then focus on their learning, because that's what they're there for.
Right. And One other thing that I really appreciated in something that I saw that you posted was that it really starts with the teachers, that they're modeling. And that's, I mean, as if being a teacher didn't have enough responsibility already, but
yeah.
But actually, you know, that's how it really stays real. And that's how it really is inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not digging deep, then where is the real joy anyway? So do you want to talk about that modeling dimension and how you prioritize that?
Yeah, we actually prioritize the teacher a lot in SEAL, in the overall SEAL methods. One of the three pillars or waves of SEAL is all about the SEAL teacher mindset and strengthening their mindset, because our role as a teacher has changed, and we need to understand that and understand, you know, what are our responsibilities. And it's modeling, yes, but it's also, you know, how we set up our room, and it's how we approach students, and it's our demeanor, and it's how we create an atmosphere inside of our classroom. And those are just so important, you know, just creating that safe learning environment. And it's also
safe and inspired. Yeah.
Absolutely. Enjoying it for ourselves and taking care of ourselves as well. That's another part of the strengthening your mindset part of SEAL. And I think it should be of all all methods that we bring into the classroom, because, you know, the teacher is the most important part of the classroom. It's not the desks, it's not the sharp pencils, it's not, you know, the books and the curriculum. It's the person that's making the connections and bringing that content to the students and leading the students to the content.
Okay. Yeah, do you hear that, administrators? Attendance? Hello.
Yeah. And I think most educators, and I'm going to wrap all educators, I think in your guts, you know that, but you also have to have the guts to really follow through with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge.
It is huge.
But I think that to have tools like this, like SEAL, social, emotional, artistic learning, is one way that things get brought together in a way that's supporting teachers' efforts instead of weighing them down with more stuff.
Yes.
Simple can be very valuable.
Agreed.
So how do people find you? Where can they see more samples of what you're doing and watch a video of you or whatever?
Oh, excellent. So you can go to theinspiredclassroom.com, the Inspired Classroom. And there is where you can locate all the arts integration blog, and it will transfer you to all the things about SEAL. We have free resources that teachers can download, and we also have a free workshop that's called The Three Secrets to Integrating the Arts with Social Emotional Learning, and that's at theinspiredclassroom.com/workshop. And teachers can, you know, just learn some of the really great strategies, the secrets to making it work inside their own classrooms, and also earn a little professional development certificate, which is a bonus.
That's very, very cool. Yeah. You say secrets, but I think we all know those secrets deep inside, but they aren't so much encouraged from certain places that have sort of make decisions for us sometimes. So
that can be true.
But so the inspiredclassroom.com.
Yes.
And if there's anything else you want to send to me, like links or anything, but I will definitely put that in the show's notes. And
excellent.
Elizabeth, what an honor. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Nini. I'm so glad we were able to chat.
Oh my, very, very much. Good. I will release you. I know you've been teaching all day and then you came in good time for this. So long day.
Yeah, but it's all good. It's all good stuff.
Yes, it is. It does give energy, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It certainly does.
Good. All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Learn more about Elizabeth Peterson at theinspiredclassroom.com. And you can also find her on Facebook at The Inspired Classroom. And a big thank you to all of our loyal listeners who keep telling all of their friends about this podcast, the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast, because we are at global rank top 5%. And that's without any marketing, because I seem to really not know how to do the marketing part of it. So thank you again to all our loyal listeners. We'll keep doing what we're doing, and you keep doing what you're doing. Bye.